Good afternoon. May I have your attention, please? Welcome. If you want to make sure you're in the right room, this is the Berliner Weiss Talk with Herr Burger Meyer. I'd like to welcome everyone. I'm the web director for the Brewers Association, and thank you all for attending this session. We're excited to have him here to continue on here so we can have more time for him to talk. Herr Meyer started his career at the Bolton Brewery, the oldest alt beer brewery in the world. He's currently, of course, as you know, at VLB Berlin. He's head of the International Training Education and is also responsible for the certified brewmaster classes and also continues to conduct research. He is head of the newly formed Berlin Brewers Guild, which we're excited to hear about. And also, I wanted to remind you, we will leave time at the end of the session for a few questions, but we will continue right now and get started. And please welcome Patrance together for Burkhard Meyer.
First of all, thank you for the introduction. Okay. Everybody can hear me? Yeah. Oh, that's great. Such a great audience in here. Wow. I think there are more people are interested in Berliner Weisse here in this room than in total Berlin. That's great. That's really great. Well, so first of all, we have to start the talk that we have this. Okay, so it's better to have you here. That's not so good here. I'm standing upstairs. The motivation for this talk. I came here now for a couple of years to see the conference and meet people in here. And always since the last years, I had the chance to try your sour beers, your beers that you call Berliner Weisse. I have to mention that there are a couple of them that are really, really good. There are a couple of them that need a little bit more improvement. There are definitely more good Berliner Weisse here in America than in Germany, because in Germany, in Berlin, we just only have one brewery left that is brewing Berliner Weisse. So definitely an advantage for you. Well, the motivation of this talk is mainly that we are doing also research work. We have very good possibilities to do research also about Berliner Weisse. And what I and my colleagues are interested in is to develop, again, recipes, old recipes, to get again the original taste of the Berliner Weisse, and at the same time, to make it easy, so that everybody can use this information later on by brewing a Berliner Weisse in his brewery in the most easiest way. Well, we have a very, very, very great advantage in Berlin, because there are still a couple of old professors in Berlin still alive that who know the real Berliner Weisse. The real Berliner Weisse, and therefore we have the advantage we can brew the Berliner Weisse in our pilot plant, doing different trials, and later on we can do really the tastings with them, and they can tell us, they are the last people who really know the real Berliner Weisse, and they can tell us whether we did a good job or not. Well, sometimes it's pretty hard to do this, yeah. But meanwhile, we developed a couple of recipes and a couple of ways that are really, really interesting. So what I want to do in here is to give you an insight into the brewing of Berliner Weisse, and also in the work that we are doing at the moment in Berlin to, come to know the old recipes a little bit better, also combined with new modern research possibilities, let's say. So all the ways of analysis in our labs and so on we can do today, definitely more things than we were able to do, 50 years ago or 20 years, 120 years ago and something like this. Well, what is Berliner Weisse? Well, I think this is one of the most important questions in here. Berliner Weisse is a top fermented beer, traditionally brewed with barley and wheat malt. And in here we can also see a couple of variations in the different recipes we have. For example, at the moment we are doing trials with wheat malt, but an undermodified malt, a chit malt, to get rid of a couple of problems I'm going to name in here in this talk. So the beer is usually pale in color, therefore you must pay attention really on the boiling procedures and so on, as well as in the mashing procedures, where you will have coloring reactions. This one here is very important, mildly acidic. Sometimes you can find Berliner Weisse that is, where you really have the feeling that you are drinking pure lactic acid. Might be good for health sometimes, but it's not really belonging to the original style of Berliner Weisse. You must have a nice level in here, and what we can you will see at the end of the presentation, I placed additional slides in here. For this talk, you will not find them in the manuals that you are able to download. But if you have questions for this, you can ask me later on. We have in Berlin a special evaluation sheet for quality evaluation of the Berliner Weisse, so the tasting and odor and so on, and all that stuff. So the next problem that can occur in here is the stable head foam. Who has in this room already experience with Berliner Weisse brewing? Okay, that's nice. Who was able to produce a very, very, very stable foam head? That's good. So, not very much of people. Well, I will give you a couple of hints. Most commonly, it is brewed as a Schankbier, what we call in Germany a beer that is brewed with a low Plato. So in between 7 to 10 degree Plato, this beer is brewed, and therefore you have a low alcohol content later on. What is interesting, if you're looking back in history of Berliner Weisse, you are also able to find the Vollbier, so a normal alcohol content as a normal beer, and also the strong beers of Berliner Weisse. This is proven in history. There were those beers available. So, but mainly what we will talk about is the normal Schankbier that is nowadays known as a Berliner Weisse. Pretty refreshing, very nice in summertime. And if I will talk more about the characteristics of Berliner Weisse, everybody will be very, very thirsty in a couple of moments. So, what is very important for the Berliner Weisse is that you have a mixed fermentation. A mixed fermentation means you are having the Saccharomyces in there. You have the lactic acid bacteria involved and Brettanomyces. And this is pretty important. The Brettanomyces is one of the most important microorganisms in here because the typical flavor of a Berliner Weisse is produced by Brettanomyces. The funny thing is that if you come to Berlin and drink the only Berliner Weisse that you can buy in the shops, I think this beer never saw a Saccharomyces. It's funny, yeah. The real lactic acid production, I am not really sure whether it is happening in the brewery or not. Well, nowadays, things are possible, but we want to talk about the traditional brewing of Berliner Weisse. So, we have, therefore, the Brettanomyces as a secondary fermentation yeast in there. Well, it is refreshing because of this lactic acid character. You have a low alcohol content, so you really can drink it in summertime. And this is also one point I want to mention. You can brew a Berliner Weisse, maybe, but it's really depending on the content of the lactic acid inside because you have to think of drinkability. You want to brew a beer that the people will drink. So not just only one sip or one beaker, you want them to drink liters of the Berliner Weisse, especially in summertime. So it may contain living cells of lactic acid bacteria. This is depending on the brewing procedure. I will mention two main different brewing procedures, and we already had a couple of experiences, and we also made a couple of mistakes that I also want to mention in here. That we are the only ones that made those mistakes, and you will not make those mistakes. That's pretty good. Well, with a Berliner Weiss, you have also a very nice flavor stability and also a very nice shelf life, because if you brew a Berliner Weiss and a good Berliner Weiss, you can store it for years and years and years. Well, we still have a couple of bottles at the VOB that are about, I think, maybe 70 years old meanwhile. So we will see what happens. Well, we have to do a couple of analyses with them, and then later on we have to see whether they're drinkable or not. Well, so the main data you can see in here, this can only be average data, not more. It can give you an idea. Well, there is not everything mentioned in here. If you see, for example, the lactic acid content, well, the lactic acid you have in there, but it's really depending on the lactic acid bacteria you are using. If you are using a homofermentative microorganism, then you only will have lactic acid in there. Out of our experience, it is much better to use a heterofermentative microorganism, for example, Lactobacillus brevis, because the Lactobacillus brevis is able to build up not just only lactic acid, it's only also producing a wee bit of alcohol, a wee bit of CO2, and also a wee bit of different other acids. For example, a little bit of acetic acid, also different types of volatile other organic acids. Here to mention is that the lactic acid bacteria and the production of lactic acid and of organic acids in here has not very much influence later on the formation of the different esters. The ester formation is, for the ester formation, you will find the Brettanomyces brucellensis responsible, and only this yeast will produce then, well, those acids and those alcohols that are really responsible for the formation of those, well, different esters you have in there. And the ester production is very important. It's the main character of the Berliner Weisse in here. So, bitterness, low in the bitter units. This is also important if you look at the boiling procedure. Well, during the boiling, there are recipes available where you do not really boil. It's just a heating up to 85 degrees Celsius just to be relatively safe in microbiology. There are other brewing procedures of Berliner Weisse where you do a normal boiling. Well, not very long, just maybe 10 minutes or something like this, but you boil. The main reason for boiling is isomerization of alpha acids, so that you have your bitter units later on, and as well, you have to think of the DMS. DMS is not very much in here, but this is also to be traced back to that they never had or mentioned the DMS in literature, because in former times, they had different cooling devices. They used cool ships, and with the cool ship, you never had a problem with DMS because you had a very, very good post evaporation. Also, with new modern cooling devices, we had no negative influence of the DMS, so it's really enough. Well, why boil longer than necessary? Because also you have the negative influences on browning reactions and coloring reactions and also aromatic reactions that you do not want to have in here. So, the Berliner Weisse history is to be traced back, well, very, very, very long. Well, this is has something to do with the fact that in former times, let's say nearly every beer was a sour beer. Yeah, people had no real idea of microorganisms and so on. So very often it happened that there was a lactic acid fermentation in there by wild fermentation. Later on, this beer really developed. You have to see it with the history of Berlin, especially after the 30-year war. The population of Berlin was very much down, and while how things are, also after the war, the plague came, and there were no people really left in Berlin. And therefore, very much of French people came there and settled there, and they also brought their Berliner, their Weiss beer with them, so their sour beer, and therefore later on a mixture developed. And the first time Berliner Weiss was mentioned really was in the year, I think 1680, at the 3rd of November, there was a problem with the laws and so on, taxes and so on. So the brown beer was taxed, and the Weiss beer was taxed much more, and therefore we have now a document that it's proven that the Berliner Weiss itself is from the 3rd November 1680. Well, if you're looking at the grist on the mashing procedure, you have normally a mixture of wheat malt and barley malt, and it can be up to 75% of wheat malt. So, in the different recipes we have, there's a very, very big variation in there. The traditional mashing procedure was a decoction mashing. It had definitely a couple of influences in here, especially if you think of that the hop dosage in those times for the Berliner Weisse was done during mashing. So you had, by this boiling of the part mashes and decoction mashing, you had influences on the isomerization, but there is not very much hops in there. The big advantage definitely is or was that you have a better filter cake in the lauter tun, so the grist will be a little bit more loose than that, but not so not so massive in that. Even if you are using the wheat malt, you have no husk with the wheat, so it is really, really better to use the natural hops. Well, I'm talking about natural hops in here, yeah? Depending on the amount of wheat, it's also has an influence on the mashing in temperatures and the mashing temperatures itself, the different steps in here. The more wheat you are using, the more you might have lower mashing in temperatures, especially for protein rests and so on. But in here, you have to level out a fact that you will meet later on. The problem of the lactic acid bacteria is that they are very high proteolytic. They can degrade proteins. They can degrade those proteins, especially at very high temperatures. Well, later on I will mention a brewing procedure of Berliner Weisse where you are doing the lactic acid fermentation in the kettle. Doing it in the kettle, so you come from the lauter tun, bring your wort in the kettle, there you will do the pitching of the lactic acid bacteria at 50 degrees Celsius, and then you can you just can wait. But you have the big advantage, later on you will boil the wort, you will kill the lactic acid bacteria after the acidification, and then you are really safe in microbiology. Because later on, and then in the cold part of the brewery, you will not spread all the lactic acid bacteria. So in here you are relatively safe. But we had one trial, we mashed out, did the lautering, transferred all the mash in the kettle, pitched it with lactic acid bacteria, and the next day we boil it, cool it down, brought it into the fermenters, and the lactic acid bacteria were so proteolytic active that there was really no foam, nothing. No foam anymore during the fermentation. And so, later on we put it in the drain. You have to be careful in here, especially at 50 degrees Celsius, or 45 degrees Celsius, those proteolytic enzymes of the lactic acid bacteria are very active. One thing that you can do against this is already to, do a little bit of acidification in the mash tun. So add a little bit acid, bring down a little bit the pH that those proteolytic enzymes do not have their optimal pH anymore in the kettle later on. This is a thing that you can do. On the other hand, if you know that the lactic acid bacteria are so proteolytic active, then you also have the possibility to play with the grist load. If you're playing with the grist load, for example, place in this chit malt. chit wheat malt we are using now to do trials with this. And then you will also have an influence on the proteins that will stay later on in there, because in the beginning you came to know we want to have a nice foam head on there. So, modern mashing procedures, a normal infused mashing, depending on the wheat. Well, maybe you will mash in already at 55 degrees Celsius, but well, this is normally a high temperature mashing procedure where you are already starting at the temperature range where the beta amylase is working. So then later on, a rest at 66 degrees Celsius and 74 degrees Celsius. Wet boiling, I told you there are two possibilities in here, mainly while heating up the wort up to 85 degrees Celsius, hold it for 30 minutes, and with 85 degrees Celsius, you're near to this magic temperature of 80 degrees Celsius, where you are normally, in microbiology, say 80 degrees Celsius for 20 minutes, then you're safe. Well, in here, a little bit safer, 85 degrees Celsius, 30 minutes, and then you can be relatively safe, because you're always bringing in microorganisms with the raw materials. And especially on here, if you do not want to have special other microorganisms in there, a boiling for a short time is necessary. Short. Maybe also 85 degrees Celsius for 30 minutes. The hop dosage is pretty low, because you have later on less than 10 bitter units, so it's not a typical American beer, but maybe it will become a typical American beer. If I see that definitely more Berliner Weisse brewers are in here than we have in Berlin. So, but be careful, please. Yeah, you can call it a Berliner Weisse if the bitter units are lower than 10. Yeah, so. Traditional hopping with natural hops, and there you are using natural hops directly in the mash tun. That's pretty interesting. But it's working, yeah? And you do not need to have special equipment later on to get rid of the spent hops then. Modern hopping and modern breweries, in the normal way, addition during the boiling. Well, now the fermentation. The fermentation is, again, very, very special. Very special because you are using different types of microorganisms. In former times, you had a mixed fermentation. A mixed fermentation means all the different microorganisms, like the Saccharomyces, Lactobacilli, and Brettanomyces, directly all together in the mixed propagation, directly in there, with a special relation to each other. Well, later on, I will give you a table in here where you can see the relation of the different microorganisms in there if you have a mixed culture. What you have to see is that all the different possibilities in here can have a special influence. If you look, for example, on Pediococcus viscosus, viscosus will tell you that it is possible for this microorganism to produce dextrins. Well, mistakes that occur sometimes can be very, very interesting. We had in Berlin, we had experience with a couple of bottles of Berliner Weisse, and there was dextrin in them. So if you turned the bottle, it was like, yeah. So we were able to get rid of this problem by heating it up shortly, kind of pasteurization. So microorganisms that were in there were also able to degrade the dextrins again at higher temperatures a little bit, and also the structure of the dextrins opened. And later on, we had a Berliner Weisse that was tasting like champagne. It was great. Well, unfortunately, we were not able to reproduce this dextrin production in here. Well, but sometimes it is pretty interesting what kind of mistakes can occur. So mainly, in here, for the lactic acid bacteria, as I told you, Lactobacillus brevis as a heterofermentative microorganism. And this is what I mentioned, the heating of the wort, especially in the kettle, add the lactose in there, propagate them, go down with a pH, and normally a night is enough, so after 6 to 9 hours, depending on how fast they are, while you're safe and directly, well, we found it perfect. Yeah? You switch off, you stopped working at the evening, and the next morning you came in there, measured the pH value, perfect. Well, we measured the pH really through, well, every hour, through the night, and well, we came to see that the pH drop really was nearly linear, so it went really down really good. So next morning we were safe with the pH we wanted to have. We have in Berlin, Berliner Weisse, we have the big advantage that also very long time ago, a couple of professors at the VLB. Did investigations, research work, and so on about this. But for example, here, Mr. Schönfeld, he was also the man who said that it might be good to heat up the wort up to 85 degrees Celsius, not higher, but to be safe with the microbiology in here. So the wort was not boiled. The grist barley ratio 1:3 or 1:4. Well, this is the normal ratio we normally have in here. So they, or he, preferred the decoction mashing. Well, this is also depending on the taste and the character of the Berliner Weisse. If you are doing decoction mashing, you boil your pulp mashes, and while you're boiling your pulp mashes, especially if you have the wheat malt in there with high protein contents, and you have already a good degradation of proteins, you will have very much of coloring substances in there because of Maillard reactions. That will occur. So definitely you have an influence on by the decoction mashing on the color and on the flavor, definitely, later on. So the hops were, in his trials, were separately used. And they were sometimes added during lautering or during the decoction boiling. So traditionally then cooled directly after the lautering procedure. When we are talking about the microbiology and whether it is enough to boil for 30 minutes or to hold the temperature about 85 degrees Celsius for 30 minutes, then you also have to keep in mind that you are still you have already done your lautering with normally high temperatures, about 80 degrees Celsius, 78 degrees Celsius in the lautering with the sparging, and therefore the lautering also takes a little bit of time. So already in here, you are working on the step that you are become safe in microbiology. Yeah, because 80 degrees Celsius for 20 minutes, 78 degrees Celsius for about half an hour, an hour, or longer lautering, depending on the amount of wheat, because you have to really be careful with the grist load in here if you do not want to lauter the whole night. What we want to have is normally the fermentation going down to the to final attenuation, and later on in those times it was done like this, that you add Kreuzen in here for the bottle conditioning later on, and to be sure that you get the CO2 content that you want to have. This Kreuzen is also very, very important. Also, you will find definitely an influence on Brettanomyces later on. So a couple of pictures from old Berliner Weisse brewing. So in here, the Raken Berliner Weisse to barrels. This here is a bottle conditioning, an old bottle conditioning of Berliner Weisse. So if you are looking on the different possibilities to do your fermentation. On the one hand side, I mentioned you have the mixed fermentation. On the other hand, you have a fermentation that you are able to split. In here, in the mixed fermentation, you can normally take every top fermenting Saccharomyces yeast. It will have an influence what kind of yeast you have in there, definitely. So there are a couple of different top fermenting yeast that will produce definitely more esters and so on, depending on temperatures and so on. What I also feel it's very, very important, if you think of the different microorganisms that are involved, and go back to the mashing procedure. At the moment, we try a special decoction mashing procedure, so with a maltase rest. So we will mash in the wheat malt in a separate mash. We'll heat it up by the temperature steps, kind of infusion mashing up to the boiling temperature. Then we give it back to the second part mash, where the barley grist is in there, and therefore we have a cooling down to 45 degrees Celsius approximately. And this is the temperature where the maltase is working. So maltose that was already fermented in the other mash is degraded then down to glucose. And this is a very interesting point, because the glucose content you have in your wort will have an influence on the esters that are fermented and fermentation byproducts. The yeast will react on this, and the yeast will produce different other fermentation byproducts, and especially the ester formation will be stronger in here. So this is what we found out in other brews and so on, and especially also for the normal wheat beer brewing. And I think it will have definitely an influence, and this hopefully will be a very interesting influence in here, if you are able to influence more those different microorganisms in here. Well, the ratio of yeast cells to the lactic acid bacteria is depending on the fermentation temperature. Especially here at higher temperatures, you will have lower amounts of yeast in here. And if you are lowering those temperatures, you have to increase a little bit the number of yeast cells in here. So this is a picture out of an old Berg in here, so by Schönfeld, and we just translated this for you into this table. So if you are interested in the different stages in here, so how much yeast cells do you have in there at the special points, well, you have to control it. And I think this talk is also available, I think, by the Brewers Association. So all the things are in there. If you are not happy with the size of my PowerPoint presentation, you can also send me an email, and I can send you a couple of copies, or make it bigger, yeah, that you can have this table in your brewery if you want to brew Berliner Weisse. A picture of Saccharomyces cerevisiae for all those people who never had a microscope in their brewery. The Saccharomyces yeast, I think you are all familiar with this. Is the primary fermentation yeast. In the literature, there is nothing really a special yeast strain mentioned. We are using special yeast strains definitely for our trials, because we know that the yeast strain definitely has an influence on on the formation of the different fermentation byproducts, definitely. So this here is the lactobacillus, Lactobacillus brevis. This is one thing that I want to mention in here. You can use different types of lactobacilli, but what we found out, or what we felt in the tastings later on, is that if you are using a Lactobacillus brevis that is a heterofermentative bacteria, you will have a wide range of those organic acids that are produced, and maybe you are not really able to detect all those different acids on your tongue. But it is like in real life, it is the number and the addition of all the different, the whole spectrum that will give the aroma. And in here as well, we feel that, especially if you're using the Lactobacillus brevis, you will have a nicer acidification in here. So it's not just only sour like lactic acid, it's also, a little bit more tickling on the tongue, yeah? So this is what we normally do in here. Other lactobacillus can be used, Lactobacillus lindri, Lactobacillus casei. The casei, may be nice for marketing. The influence itself in here on the formation of acids is not so big, let's say. What I mentioned is already the lactic acid or the lactic acid bacteria themselves. They do not have such a big influence on the flavor profile later on. They have just only really an influence on the acidic profile you find in the beer. So further on, you have to see that bacteria are very sensitive to the hops. Hops will have an influence in here, definitely. Well, one thing that I want to mention in here, well, further on, I see that I do not have very much time left, 10 minutes. Well, but I'm definitely better in the time than last time when I spoke about alt beer. Well, with the alt beer, I was, I think, directly in the middle of my talk. Well, so Brettanomyces brucellensis, very important microorganism in here. Especially, you have to see it's a polymorph microorganism. What is polymorph? Polymorph is a nice word, definitely. Means that, well, in the genetic structure, you will find also in one culture very much of differences, well, to make it as easy as possible. It is producing very, very much of different volatile components and esters and so on. So the main microorganism that is responsible for the taste. Mainly, you can find in here the production of... the ethanol lactic acid esters and the acetate, ethyl lactate and ethyl acetate. This is are the most esters that are produced, but also you will find a very wide range of different other esters. While they are not very, very much in there, but they are in there. And as I told you, well, the whole profile is important in here. What we are doing at the moment in the yeast bank that we have at the VLB, we have about 30 different Brettanomyces yeasts. And what we will do now with modern procedures, what we want to do now is we want to do a scan of all those different Brettanomyces yeasts that we can offer you also while an insight into the flavor profile of all the different yeast types that we have in there. And this is also what we are planning at the moment. Yeah, so put them into our fermentation tubes, measure at different temperatures, different fermentations we want to do with them, and to see and later on analyze the flavor profile that they can give. What can they do? This is what we want to know. They are very alcohol tolerant, and the flavor itself is the main flavor that you can find later on in the Berliner Weisse. This here. Is the Franke method for the acidification I mentioned already. So according to this method, we try to build up this new method for the acidification in the brew house. Yeah, so this is also what I already mentioned. So you go down with the temperature after the lautering procedure, pitch your lactose in there, let it ferment in there, bring down the pH, and then later on you boil. And then later on you have the acidification, but you have no lactose anymore in there. And so... the microbiological safety in the brewery is definitely better if you have killed your lactose than if you do not want to have an influence on your other beer styles. So a couple of pictures on Weissbier culture. You see the different different bottles we have, also different glasses. What we are doing at the moment, we have the recipe of the Breithaupt Brewery now. After a little bit of research work in libraries and so on, we found this old recipe, and according to this recipe, we developed this recipe that we are using now, what I mentioned with the chit malt and also the Maltese rest in there, and this leveling out. This is what we're trying now. Different Berliner Weisse glasses. One of the most popular were those clown gläser. So if you are brewing a Berliner Weisse and you make a Berliner Weisse festival or something like this, it's also pretty good to have those glasses, because you have the traditional feeling in there. Yeah? If you are looking at those other glasses, kind of like those here, a couple of, well, different things. And here you can see that Berliner Weisse also is traditionally was served with Woodruff syrup or raspberry syrup. Meanwhile, also in Berlin, you will find, well, 30, 40 different types of syrup that you can place in there. I prefer it pure, but we are going to have a look on the different quality criteria later on. Well, this is how it looked like when you were drinking a Berliner Weisse in former times. Maybe I will look like this as well in the future, sitting in Berlin, sitting there with Matt. You will come back to Berlin. Yeah. So, unfortunately, the Weissbier culture is nearly dead in Berlin. You can find the Berliner Weisse, but you will not find any more real Berliner Weisse breweries, real Berliner Weisse pubs, and so on. But, well, we are also working on this. So, what I also want to mention is that a couple of different names, well, for you, as you want to brew Berliner Weisse, it might be interesting to have also those traditional names. Maybe you want to name your beer like this, hopefully not a Nullweisse, because a Nullweisse, a Zero Weisse is, well, an undrinkable Berliner Weisse. Yeah? So the next judges here for the beer, in the next years, well, if you will find a bad Berliner Weisse, you write down Nullweisse, and then everybody knows what it is. Yeah, but you can do a Sandweisse, Steinweisse, so a special aged Berliner Weisse, and I know that you are interested in special flavors, and you are interested in special brewing methods, and you are interested in also aging of beer. What can you do with this? Here with a Berliner Weisse, you can do it, yeah, and you are allowed to, because it's historic. So, problems with a Berliner Weisse are always to be mentioned, like the bottle conditioning. Sometimes, if you're doing a bottle conditioning, well, you need very, very, very much space and very much rooms. The main problem in here in the Berliner Weisse is to be mentioned that you have three different microorganisms in your brewery that can also spoil other beers. So you have to work very, very, very clean. And this is the most important point in here. So you will have more work if you're doing a Berliner Weisse. Here, I just want to show you a couple of examples what different breweries are doing. And what you can see in here mainly is, well, brewing a Berliner Weisse, I can give you a couple of hints. You have to decide later on what is the best way. The main thing is that later on the product is a Berliner Weisse. How you brew it? Well, you have different possibilities in here. Yeah? You can be creative in here. That's nice. But be not so creative in the final product. Yeah, a Berliner Weisse is a Berliner Weisse. And therefore, just a moment. Here we are. Please. Look at this. Well, there are the most important thing later on is the quality control. And the most important thing in quality control is whether it tastes good or not. Because if it's not tasting good, if it is a Nullweisse, you will not sell it. Well, sometimes I have the feeling that consumers are very crazy. They will buy everything as long as it's special. But, well, you are brewers. You are proud to be brewers, and therefore, you have to be honest. Brew a good Berliner Weisse and do the quality test. Because only with a constant quality, and this is a pretty hard thing to do with a Berliner Weisse, because you have to know how to handle your microorganisms, you have to know how to handle your brewing process, to produce always a constant quality. This is what brewers can do. This is why we are brewers. This is why not everybody is brewing. But especially later on in the rating, whether you have a good quality or not, I want to give you this at hand to be able to rate the quality, what is in there. Yeah? So turbidities, for example, flower formation, turbidity and sediments in there. Well, especially the consumers, will not really like it. If there is, if it is clear, if you have a nice sediment in there with the yeast that sedimented in there, that's okay. But if you have something in there where the consumers do not really know what it is, they will not drink it. Yeah. Foam, also a very, very important thing. This here is one thing that you have that I already mentioned. Make sure that if you are using the Franke method, boiling in the kettle, that with those, or acidification in the kettle, that you do not destroy all your proteins in there. Another possibility is the use of a higher or lower modified malt, so the chit malt in there. Here it can make sense. So the foam is an important thing, and it's belonging to the quality criteria of a Berliner Weisse. If you have a Berliner Weisse where there's no foam on there, it's not good. Okay? So it's the same with the aroma and the odor. So maybe you want to use it. If you want to use those diagrams, just maybe send me an email, and then I can send them to you. I added them to this talk because I felt it's a nice thing to have it in here for the end of the presentation, that we start with the idea of quality, and later on we are talking then about quality. Thank you very much. I'm open now for your questions. Well, no questions in here. Well, is it working here?
I'm wondering what you do the method where you acidify in the kettle.
Pardon?
Would you do the method where you acidify in the kettle and then boil again?
Or maybe give the others, please, the chance also to understand the question. So we are very sportive now.
If you use the method where you're going to acidify in the kettle and then boil,
yeah,
they're probably not adding Brett later in. I mean, you could, I guess, but because the Brett's an important part, and you're just doing your acidification in the...
You're doing the acidification with lactic acid bacteria.
Yeah, in the kettle, and then boiling.
You boil it, and then later on, you pitch your yeast, your normal yeast, and then for the post-fermentation, you will add the Brett and Neumeisters. Okay. So the Brett and Neumeisters never saw the kettle. Maybe you pass it further on.
After the lacto fermentation in the kettle, how much sugar is remaining for secondary fermentation?
Also enough for the first fermentation. You are really, really saving here. The lactose are not taking very, very much of the sugars. That's why you're saving that. Enough. Yeah. Maybe it's going down about 1 or 2 percent Plato, and then you're still safe.
Okay. Thank you.
I've seen a lot of conflicting information about the lactobacillus producing lactic acid just, you know, in the early phases of in the kettle, or it takes 8 months to mature and it'll get more sour later on. Can you say a little bit about when the lactobacillus is in growth phase and fermentation phase and all of that?
The thing is, in here you have mainly the influence of the Brettanomyces. It's not so much the lactose. The lactose will bring down the pH very, very fast, and then you're also safe. But the Brettanomyces later on is also building up different organic acids and also the esters and so on. Therefore, at least I would say to have a nice Brettanomyces influence in here, you must have at least, let's say, 2 or 3 months of post-fermentation or maturation itself. Otherwise, you will not have the real Brettanomyces. Brettanomyces is slow, it's calm. Yeah. Well, I think most of you know the Brettanomyces. You will need time to go.
Okay, but the lacto itself will be pretty much finished once the primary fermentation starts.
Not normally. Well, they can stay in there, and also with a low pH. You will have a very, very stable beer, definitely.
What's the target pH level when you do kettle acidification?
3.5 maybe.
Okay, so, thank you.
I had the same question on the mashing adjustment. What target pH were you looking for when you do your mash adjustment?
Just bring it down. Well, maybe to 4.5, maybe or something like this. Well, it's not so much. You have to go down there. Well, 4.8 maybe.
Thank you.
It's just important that you go down if you want to be safe against the proteolytic activity. So the more you go down, the better it is. So especially in here, you can already go down also further on because later on. You will not have a pH drop that you normally have during the boiling, but because you have just a short boiling procedure in here, so.
When you're acidifying in the kettle, as you mentioned, and then boiling,
yeah.
Is it important to maintain that 45 degrees Celsius for the 8 or 9 hours, or did you let the temperature drop?
Well, the big advantage normally is that you have insulated kettles.
Right.
Therefore, you will stay in the range of maybe in the beginning 50 and later on 38 or something like this. But as long as it is working, the big advantage is you do not have to heat or to put energy in there. But you just only have a cooling down. While we in our pilot plant we have the big advantage that we have so much temperature losses from the weight from the water ton to the kettle. That we will leave the water ton at 78 degrees Celsius and will arrive in the kettle at 50.
Okay.
So we use this advantage in here, what normally is a disadvantage. But if you have an insulated kettle, the lactase are also working later on, at lower temperatures in here. But mainly, in the beginning, around 45, 48, 50 degrees Celsius, and then you're safe.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
I was wondering about mash souring,
yeah.
As opposed to acidification in the kettle. If you guys have experimented with that at all, and if you've seen
when I was talking about acidification of the mash, I'm not talking about adding lactobacilli in there. There, I'm talking about working not according to the German purity law. A little bit of acid in there, yeah? But you have the possibilities in here.
Do you see any flavor difference between? Say, a significant portion of an acidified mash without additional acidification in the kettle versus doing a overnight in the kettle?
Again, acidification in the mash?
It's like doing a sour mash. Mashing in at 45 degrees and letting it sit for overnight in the mash tun.
Well, never tried this. But I feel you will have definitely an influence on the, an influence on the flavor, because you will have in special ranges, special higher enzymatic activities during the mashing. This is clear because the most important enzymes during mashing they are working better at lower pH values. As long as you do not drop down to 3.5 or something like this.
Great, thanks.
So I have done sour kettling at the pub I used to work at a few years ago, about 5 years ago, to make a Berliner Weiss. I had great success. Obviously, we were only doing draft accounts. And a few times I had issues with clarity. I was wondering if you would give your insight as to if you would filter or fine or just say it's a little on the cloudier side, go with it.
Filtration of Berliner Weiss.
We didn't do it. We didn't do it. I didn't want to. I ended up serving it, a little bit cloudier than I hoped.
The great thing in here is that I'm on the safe side, because we are talking about Berliner Weiss, and if it should be a Berliner Weiss, it is unfiltered.
Right.
So,
okay. Thanks.
Easy answer.
So I think the gentleman a few minutes ago was touching on traditional sour mashing and acidification entirely through the mashing process. And is that something that you have done or would encourage, or what are the advantages and disadvantages of doing it that way?
Well, if you're doing acidification of the mash itself, you will definitely have an influence on the different enzymes. And therefore, you will have a better yield. You will increase your brewer's yield, definitely. And also, you will have an influence, therefore, later on, also a wee bit on the flavor, definitely.
Okay. And I know a lot of people with their mash tuns probably have the ability to keep things oxygen-free.
Yeah.
We did a sour mash at our pub a couple months ago, and we had the ability to purge our mash tun with CO2 and hold pressure on it and keep it anaerobic. And so if you do the boil kettle method, is that, well, you're rubbing your forehead. I'm glad I was able to provide some comedy. But
the thing is, I'm from Germany, and normally in Germany we have the tendency for over-engineering. Yeah? If we, if somebody says oxygen, yeah, well, panic. Yeah, no oxygen in the brewing process. I prefer to see this problem more in an easy way, and try to explain things. If you meshing in with low amounts of oxygen is already possible in the way how you do it. Well, how do you add your grist in there? Yeah? Stirrer speed is a very, very interesting thing. Well, if you look in a couple of mesh tons with a stirrer speed, you ask yourself, what do they want to do? Do they want to make a milkshake, or do they want to stir? Yeah? Stirring is just only for the distribution of the particles. Also, later on in the boiling kettle, if you think the different steps in the brewing process at those high temperatures, you already did your lautering procedure. How much oxygen are you able to solute in a liquid of 78 degrees Celsius that was in there for about 1 hour maybe? Relatively low amounts. And later on in the boiling process, when you heat up for the boiling, there's definitely not very much of oxygen that you can get in there. So, I hate a little bit this panic about oxygen in the breweries, as long as you're having a look on that you have the right use of your pumps, that you have the right use of your stirrers. If you have, do not throw in your grist in the beginning, yeah, so that you have the entry of so much oxygen. I think you're safe then. Yeah, the aging of the products later on. Well, the problem is mainly later on during the filling. Yeah, well, everybody thinks about the different possibilities where you have an oxygen intake in the brew house. Well, the main oxygen intake you have later on and the main influence of oxygen on the flavor is during the filling process.
I think people are more concerned with oxygen giving other bugs a chance to take off in the kettle. Yeah, during the sour fermentation, so to speak.
Yeah, but this is what I mentioned. You do not really have the chance to salute so much oxygen in your wort later on.
But just atmospheric oxygen.
Yeah. So, but most of I think most of your brewing kettles are closed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
they can be.
As long as you're safe in there and you have no other microorganisms in there and no contact to the environment, if the kettle is closed, how much oxygen can come in there, and well, how can you do have then later on a contamination in there? Well, as long as you're working safe and clean, then you're good.
Okay. Thank you.
Two questions more? Okay. Two more minutes. Ask it.
Yeah, question about preferred varieties or types of wheat to be used for the proper flavor and aroma.
Well, if you see that most of the wheat that you are using for brewing is not really brewer's wheat, it is a wheat malt. As long as you have the high quality in there, that's okay. I think most of the malteries can deliver you the wheat. Sometimes it can be a problem to get the chit malt as wheat malt. We are working together with a maltery. Well, you all know this maltery, and they are it's possible for them to produce also special batches, let's say.
So no real difference between winter or spring or red or white.
I would say not really. But the normal wheat malt you can buy. Yeah.
Thank you.
Just a quick question. Did you play around much with aging of the Berliner Weiss with the Brett at different temperatures? Or
not really with the aging. Well, we have the normal maturation temperatures in there. Well, a couple of bottles we also sometimes store at room temperatures, just to have a look on the development of the Brettanomyces. And in the scope of aging, we also want to do now a couple of analysis with old bottles that we have that we stored about, well, about more than 50 years. And also, our brewmaster found a bottle of Berliner Weisse that is older than 100 years. So we are really, really looking forward to this analysis. Yeah? So maybe we can get a little bit of insight in that.
To follow up on the gentleman's question about wheats and using the wheat, in some of the slides that you have on the real technical data about brewing and when it showed the three breweries, it was the VLB's conclusion that wheat was not, on a flavor impact side, not even necessary in Berliner Weisse, and that it could be brewed with just 100% barley malt. What is your opinion, not on, on the protein side, on trying to get that head retention?
The wheat hasn't.
Do you like it as a flavor?
The wheat itself has not an influence directly on the typical flavor of the Berliner Weisse, so the impact is very, very low. You have an impact definitely on the protein side, and therefore you also have it on the flavor side, because we'll have if you're doing a decoction mashing or a boiling, you will have an impact on the flavor by special flavor products that will be produced. On the other hand, you have to see that if you're using wheat malt, you will have a higher amount of glucose, for example, so a different sugar spectrum in the beginning, and this will also have an influence on the yeast. But the main flavor that you will find in a wheat beer or in a Weiss beer is given by the yeast itself. So the yeast has an influence, and here the yeast and Brettanomyces later on, and not the wheat really. It has always an influence, as long as it is a small influence. If you are using wheat and you have more glucose in the beginning in there, the yeast will react, and the yeast will produce more esters, more of those flavors. And therefore, we are also very interested in the results of this special mashing program that we are trying at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you.